Well, hello and welcome to what is the 108th episode of the Adoption and Fostering podcast, Marmite, on the toast of the adoption industry. With me, Al Coates, and him...
Scott Kesson-Runny!
Oh, well, Scott, how the heck are you?
Oh, so we're Marmite now, are we? How am I? I'm still recovering from last week, to be perfectly frank with you. Still a bit tired. Not because we had to finish manual labour, and was it? But, you know, it's just,
It was hardly coal mining, was it?
No, exactly. Yeah. We should be grateful for what we've got, honestly.
We have, yeah. So we've survived the conference, which was, I think, a raging success. Tonight we were going to do Sarah Lloyd's. We were going to top and tail Sarah Lloyd, but actually we realised we had so much to say that we thought it was probably best if we... rather than sort of have like Sarah Lloyd as just like something that happened at the beginning of the podcast, we would just rattle through... It's almost like a news roundup, isn't it? Because the newspapers have just been full of and if we get to that one at the end, that'll
be cracking.
I can't even look at it written down because it's... Right, okay, so there's a list of very serious things we need to get to. But there's one at the very end that if we get that far...
Anybody listening gets that far, then you've made it, I tell you.
Well, as evidence is that lots of people do listen to that point. So anyway, well done. So this is we're also streaming this live, but we're not literally paying any attention to that whatsoever. So who knows what's happening? Probably nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Right, cool.
Nobody's watching. So, nobody ever cares, to be honest.
No, it's just, no, my mother watches just out of duty. It's the only reason she's involved. Right, I'm going to literally turn that off and maybe look and see if there's any comments at the end, see what's happening.
That's probably a good idea because it's distracting, which I found on Friday with the Q&A and the live chat on the Zoom thing. That was distracting. And especially when I was doing my session, I literally had to minimize the bit and just try and ignore it.
Yeah.
I mean, because they keep flashing up, don't they?
We wanted to run the conference slightly differently. We wanted it to kind of reflect the tone and this sobriety of the podcast, and failed dismally. But what we wanted to do was to feel like it was something that people could dip in and out of through the day.
Yeah.
So we were there for all but 10 minutes of it, really, in different guises, and there was a bit of, you know, and it was serious at times. It was really spot on. All of it was spot on. But then we sort of dipped in and out. And I think on our own terms, it was what we wanted. And I think that's as good as we've gotten. And the feedback we've had has been genuinely positive. Anyway, people I've spoken to.
It has, actually. Yeah, and me. And lots of nice messages. And some of the agencies that, how do I put this? Who invested a bit of their little pots of cash in getting some families along as well. The feedback from them was really good as well. So all I've got to say to them is pay your bills. Please.
We know where you are. We'll send our kids round.
You're right. It kind of was a little bit of a flight of fancy for us. But actually, if we enjoy doing it, the chances are, because we're quite simple, well, you are. The chances are that actually, you know, if we enjoyed it, then others enjoyed it as well. And that's kind of what I take from it. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
I love doing it.
And I think it sets it reflects the needs of adoptive parents, you know, contemporary adoption and contemporary life, you know, that actually you can't get into a physical location. There's great benefits in that, but actually for a lot of people, that's just never possible.
Yeah. That was really the only thing that I missed was actually being with people on the day. And, you know, I went to 5 years of Adoption UK conferences and did, you know, two or three of them myself.
You're a people person, aren't you?
I like to mix. I like to socialise. You know, I like the night before. I like the night after. You know, all that sort of stuff. But on the day as well, it's really nice, you know, to be able to kind of hook up with your community and stuff. But, you know, we did what we did. Yeah. And, you know, once we recover from this, who knows?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've not particularly shared plans with you. I was sort of teasing you a bit on social media just because the machinations of my mind. But those like 280 questions, people got an opportunity to ask questions all the way through all day long, which is different again to a conference, isn't it? There's almost like an immediacy of, hey, I want to ask this question. And as we go, we're doing it.
Yeah. And also some people don't like to take the mic at a conference and ask a question because it might be not that kind of person. That would be me, you know. Years ago, I wouldn't have done that. I'd just thought, oh, I'll just sit on that and see if someone else asks it, and then, you know, I don't know. But there's that option as well. And yeah, it was just, I just hope we've answered all the questions though. There was a lot. I mean, there was quite a few duplicates. So people asking the same thing.
Nearly 300 questions across the day. So what then happened was the panelists, the people who did the speaking, then hung around and answered the questions directly to the people who'd asked them. So it was just a really, I think it was a unique sort of format. We're all probably a bit zoomed out, but I think we brought something a bit different to it. So format we're going to redo. I think what I'd like to do, if I'm being really honest, I think is there's a real need for a similar format, but around specific issues. So I thought maybe to broaden that out, maybe do half days, but maybe do full day on a given issue and maybe charge a little bit more, but maybe reduce the size of the people attending.
The audience kind of thing,
I thought about...
There's lots of... The good thing is you've got lots of options and it's not something that we wanted to particularly get into, but actually... You know, it's the whole point of the podcast is
either
to
that or coal mining.
No, but the whole point of the podcast is making it accessible, isn't it? And you know, if we can do that with some other stuff, then fabulous. And you know, let's face it, you know, there's lots happening in the world at the minute in terms of online stuff, but actually, the community stuff is very important. That's my view, anyway. So
That was good because I was worried we were going to get all self-congratulatory, but we didn't. So I'm very pleased about that.
Oh, I've got lots of feedback for you privately. Don't worry.
Well, you freaked me out because you said, "Oh, I have got feedback," and I texted you quite anxiously and went, "What? Yes, my insecure attachment? What the hell?" And it was just more about my bad attitude.
It was funny to get that message. Yeah, well, it was interesting because I tweeted that and you took it really seriously, and then you text me. And then about an hour later, you could tell you'd been sitting there contemplating what I said, and you came back an hour later going, "No, seriously, what do you mean? Do we need to talk about this?" I was like, "Oh, okay. I found his Achilles heel."
Oh, I'm hugely insecure. I'm a blubbering wreck of a man wrapped in the facade of a gruff northern buffoon.
Mm. Yeah.
I am conscious that there's quite a bit of news, a lot of news to go on. Did you see in the news today, and I guess it's a bit, I know you're in Ireland, but let's forget that for a minute. I'm totally impressed.
I've got Sky News on, that's UK.
Excellent, yeah. We've got a lot of American listeners recently, and we've got like 10% of our listeners are now American.
Wow.
We have gone a bit global,
haven't we? You know, we had Hong Kong and Australia for the conference.
Isle of
Wight. Who are obviously listeners as well, so hi to them, hi to you.
Yeah, people in
Isle of Wight, yeah.
International. Somerset, Cornwall.
Listen, anything is international where you need a passport to go to, let's face it, you know, especially for that gruff northern coal mine background.
So this is a bit this is English England centric, but you know, you kind of, if you got this far, then you probably know that that's more. So we have what is called a Children's Commissioner, and she is appointed by the Department for Education, and the Children's Commissioner has a tenure. I don't know, is it a tenure or are they just employed until they resign?
So no, I don't know, actually. I think they must have a tenure similar to the chair of the SGLB.
There's probably a caveat that if you don't toe the line, you'll be invited or not invited to reapply for the next.
Well,
the current children's, or the about to leave Children's Commissioner, Anne Longfield, has come out, and she's in the national press and basically said that the corporate parent, so that would be local authorities, are the technical corporate parent, are rubbish. Basically, that's what she said.
Yeah.
If I think even to the point of... it's quite a bold statement, and it's an unusual statement, isn't it? But is it that unusual when people are leaving to kind of set fire to the building as they're leaving?
I think it depends on how long she saw that as well. It might not be a new thing. She may have been thinking that for some time.
Sort of 3 days.
But you're right.
She went, this is a bit...
Yeah, exactly.
I've got the mortgage to pay, so I'm going to toe the line.
Yeah, and let's face it, some of her kind of, you know, having... She's also been using social media all that time as well, which is where I've picked up most of her messages and most of her kind of bits and pieces. And sometimes she's been a little bit kind of, what's the word?
Pro-government?
What's that word?
Resistant?
A little bit fighty.
But, right,
a little bit fighty, but sometimes... Well, yeah, and also, you know, I don't know. But not as fighty... as I think someone in that position should be, if that makes sense.
Oh, it's a devil of a job, isn't it? You're paid if you...
Well, I know, but, you know, it's kids we're talking about. It's the future of our...
Can I quote whatever. Mark Owers at you, who's a government advisor? And he said to me once, he said, the thing is...
He's watching, so you might as well.
He's not watching. He said, now you've made
he's
me forget
watching.
What he
just said he's watching.
All right. That, I'm not going to say what he said then. Anyway, basically, it's... It's that idea of if you don't not at the table, you can't. I'm not going to use his words, but if you're not at the table, you can't engage in that. So, do you hold your someone in government position or civil service permission, any sort of head of national charity? Well, you know, like this, that you temper what you really think so that you can maintain cordial relationships with people, with a hope that you can affect change, positive change.
Yeah.
Until you're
Mark Owers is saying. Mark Horace is asking on live on Facebook, what did I say? So it's a 5-year tenure. It's very well paid. It's as part of the DfE as well. So I'm just reliably informed from my sources who are doing little research while I'm chatting to you. They're obviously listening.
Your crack team of researchers.
Thanks, Tris.
Who are feeding into your ear. Excellent. It's great. Researcher stroke complaints department. That's where, if you want to email the show, I love it calling it the show. If you want to email the show, please do anfpodcast@gmail.com. That'd be great. Yeah. And if you want to put a review on iTunes, please do. And since we've
please
had
don't,
the email
it's
up,
going to be crap listening to this.
It's not. This is quality stuff. I think that the thing about the any departmental role, even like the chair of the Adoption Special Guardian Leadership Board, you may think that this is a total disaster. But what are you going to say? You're not going to say, "Oh, this is a total disaster." You're a shower to the government or anyone.
Yeah.
Because that's the end of your job. Your influence is gone. Yeah. Your desire to affect change is removed. So that Anne Longfield is on the, you know, literally she's walking out the building, she's shouting back over her shoulder, and while I'm on, the whole damn lot of yes. That's what she's doing, isn't it?
I've just got this vision in my head now of her turning back as she's holding her box files with her plants sticking out top, going, and while I'm on.
And look at the thing.
Oh, but dear.
It's interesting, though, this idea of the corporate parent, because I... I was thinking about this quite seriously because I was doing... part of my role is I do reviews with foster carers. And I was just chatting to a foster carer about the person that they'd been caring for a long time. And they said to me, so over a four and a half year period, that young person had 12 social workers. Mm. Right. In the last 10 months, they'd had 5. We worked it out. It was less than 30 working days per person. So when we talk about the corporate parent, that is the corporate parent.
That is the corporate parent. Yeah, that is the face that the child sees, isn't it? And that is their corporate parent.
Yeah, and if your adoptive children have come through that system, your special guardianship children, a big cohort of them may have come through the looked after child system.
Yeah.
And foster children are in that. And it's pretty shoddy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And the thing is, I mean, I know that people leave jobs and move on and stuff like that, but, you know... One thing that I kind of disagree on is using kind of agency staff to, you know, be the social workers of children who need that little bit of longevity in a relationship, and who can prepare for moving on and all that sort of stuff. Now, I'm just using that as an example of one of the reasons why, you know, there may have been a lot of changes with that specific child, but, you know, and especially in some of the kind of city agencies, perhaps that might be, they might have bigger turnover and what have you, but, you know, these are, these are things that, you know, nobody's really looking at thinking it about. You know, we're looking to recruit foster carers and adoptive parents, but actually, you know, let's invest a little bit in the kind of structures of these organisations. And
well, there's the care review, isn't there?
Provide,
there is a planned care review, but there's lots of people even before it starts kind of saying it's a done deal because it's by people. I mean, Mark, speaking of Mark Owers, who is a government advisor, he did the fostering stock take, didn't he?
Which he did, came out
2018 with Sir Martin Neri. And I think that brought out some interesting stuff around capacity, because there's always this question about, is there enough capacity? And they sort of said, well, there's enough carers, not it's just that they're not necessarily the right type of carers. Because obviously one of the conditions of your approval as a foster carer is you put on specifically what you want to be approved for. So if you want to be under 10s, over 10s, boys, girls, siblings. So I think that it raises lots of questions about what does the, you know, because actually you can build the best system in the world, but if there's no resources for it, so what? Mm. And actually the system we've got with correctly resourced, would that be a system that would work? Would it be much better? Because I think that the reflection, and I don't particularly want to kind of get drawn into the actual physicality of the nuts and bolts of this case, that, you know, the example I gave. But what I did see was that it was a couple of years when there was one social worker, and it was different. It made a difference. It made a difference around the whole kind of ecosystem around that young person, and you know, on the impact on schools, on foster carers, on supervising social workers, on independent reviewing officers. So there's a lot to. So I think it's got to come. Resources has got to be a big factor. You know, we could build a wonderful system, but if we can't man it or put money into it. So go for it, Anne Longfield. She'll be, what she'll be doing. She'll be collecting the trolleys at Tesco's before the ink is dry. Like on the Guardian.
Well, that's the other thing as well. I mean, obviously change happens, doesn't it? And tenures come to an end and all that sort of stuff. But it'll be interesting to see with the appointment of the new chair of the SGLB, new children's commissioner, you know, how things start to maybe change. Do they go forward? Do they move back? You know, all that sort of stuff. And it takes people time to settle into these roles, obviously. But it would be really interesting to see kind of some of the things that can happen as a result of the change of people. And, you know, with a change of person comes a change of attitude.
Yeah.
Mark Owers.
Yes.
Stop, Mark, please, because you're
Longfield.
She could be a foster care.
Absolutely. Talk's cheap. Get yourself a couple of kids and we'll, you know, then we'll see. Won't you?
Yeah, they're 10 a penny, apparently.
Mark Owers isn't on a right roll.
He's on a roll tonight. Yeah.
We should get him back on the show, but he's always very candid.
He is.
He's very, very careful.
Can't wait till his tenure finishes and then get him on.
What is interesting, though, that is the 25th today, and there's been the spending review, which is a big hoo-ha in Parliament.
So, yeah.
Which is happens every 3 years, but it was postponed last year. It was due to happen last year. It was postponed to this year, and then obviously we've had, you know, but with one thing another, I think the world has changed somewhat. I got in touch with my moles, my secret moles. Actually, I just emailed someone and you at the DFA and I said, any word on what's the word on the street? And they went, there's no word on the street, basically. So I've got nothing to tell.
Well, the thing is, somebody asked the same question on Twitter and they tagged a few people in it. And someone did reply, and it's true. You know, the allocation has gone to the DFE or the team around there. And then it's up to them how they distribute it. So, you know, that's kind of, that'll take a couple of weeks to filter through in terms of the ASF, won't it?
I would have thought it'd be January, to be realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, like you say, the pot of money's been allocated to the DfE, and they've then got to look in the context of all the challenges within the education world.
Yeah, exactly.
And, whereas a year ago, I don't know about you, we could have probably said with a level of certainty or a level of confidence, we feel it probably will happen. No one's saying nothing at the moment, so
which is a worry. Exactly.
I've been getting a lot of private messages, people asking me what they know about it and stuff, but which is unusual because normally no one contacts me for all the obvious reasons. which I feel like this is a seamless, all of our, the segues between our different things.
The segues are amazing, aren't they? Because I know where you're going now.
We're on fire. So did you see the newspaper article about a new career in fostering? No, we're not getting
career.
To that
yet. Career
progression. Because it was like preying on people who'd lost their jobs, preying on them. That's emotive.
No, not. You should really think before you speak, shouldn't you? It was kind of opening itself up to people who may have lost their jobs and inviting them in to become.
Is an income.
Well,
stream.
Not. Let's face it. Not become foster carers, because you can't just become a foster carer. You know, you have to be assessed, and it's not going to be. You know, and I think this is where this was pitched a little bit wrong, because if you're urgently seeking an income, you're not going to get it from fostering, because it's going to take you a while to be. You know.
Well, if you read, clearly you didn't read that far down, but they talked about fast tracking the approval process.
Yeah. Well, you know, again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because there's no minimum amount of time you can do the approval process in, which is reasonable. But there is a maximum, which is 9 months for, which I've repeatedly said, 9 months for fostering, 6 months for adoption. Yeah. I do think it's an interesting sort of thing. I'm going to post this up into the comments because I can. I'm going to post a link to it so people can read it. And I do think that it's really interesting, again, that it's... I do preparation at foster courses, you know, where people are coming in and thinking, and kind of one of my first lines is, look, I don't personally have a problem with people earning a living being a foster carer. I said, but it is a really crap way of earning a living. It's a hard way. It's 24/7.
It is hard, yeah.
And you have to give something of yourself much more than you would in a job. You have to give your privacy, your personal life. I'm reluctant to use the language of calling, but I think that there's an element of it being a vocation, a calling. It's like your ethos and values have got to be doing that. It's not just that's a canny amount of money, I'll do it. Because it'll show up any cracks in your kind of, in that ethos and value system you've got quite quickly.
Yeah. It's also another example of kind of that, the desperation that we have in terms of being able to look after children in this country, because there isn't enough of them. We just touched on the fostering stock take there. You know, it's very similar in terms of what came out of that, in terms of the capacity. You know, we don't have the capacity in this country to you know. And then if you add on the things like, because it mentioned it in that one as well, because the agency that they refer to covers most of the South, or a lot of the South of England, where actually there's a lot of kind of, what's the word for?
You're on fire tonight.
I hate using words that I don't that aren't socially acceptable. So
good grief!
I know. Yeah,
this
surprising
is live.
That,
be careful.
It?
Normally we can.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. Yeah. So
when you go all Afghanet on the world. Exactly.
I'm going to leave that one there because I can't remember the words. There you go.
But I don't know the background. You need someone, you know, wiser and more diligent than me. But it did feel like one of these kind of corporate foster care organisations. Yeah. There was no sense of it.
Look, there's an opportunity for us to recruit. Yeah. Let's use this as a kind of, you know, no different to the ones that we've seen coming out of other places recently.
Yeah.
Which have stopped, thankfully. Well, I haven't been made aware of them because my DMs were flooded when that previous one came out. So,
let's not open that can of worms because that's a world of hate and pain. So, segue from newspaper to newspaper. If anyone was on my Facebook page, I posted was it the Hertfordshire Gazette or the Hertfordshire Bugle or something? Prospective adopters.
Hertfordshire Bugle.
I don't know. I can't remember. I've lost the link. It's on my on my Facebook page. If you want to seek that out. Again, a really concerning narrative.
See, now this one really got to me. I might get a bit ranty on this one, to be honest with you, because
I'll go and get a comfy chair.
Yeah, do. Yeah, pour another drink. Put the fire on. Because this really bugged me that this kind of entitlement.
Explain it. Explain it, because I haven't explained it.
Sorry. Well, just because I've read it doesn't mean to say the whole world.
Yeah, just ranting randomly about things people don't understand.
Yeah, so this was a story that appeared in this newspaper about a couple who had decided that after not being able to have their own children that they were going to adopt. And unfortunately, the agency told them that they needed to kind of... what's the word? I'll just say, yeah, they needed to slow down. They needed to, one of them needed to lose some weight. One of them needed, they both needed to bolster up their finances a little bit. And there was another thing as well, but I can't remember. Oh, they needed to have counselling.
Yes.
Yeah. Not counselling like a counsellor, like a local counsellor. Proper counselling with an S, because it was spelt counselling like a local councillor in the newspaper, which I picked up on, which just shows you. Yeah, exactly. So there were those three things. And so you posted it on your Facebook and I read it and I went, but that's fine. Surely that is fine. You know,
I know.
I just do not get it. And this couple, you know, God love them.
I know.
It just came over as such an entitled thing that they were willing to give a child a home and they wanted to be adopters and da-da-da-da-da. Well, I'm sorry, that's really not... It's not 1965. You know, that's not how it works.
Shocking.
And the fact that the newspaper even picked up on this as a story really is quite a frustration, actually. Because that's not how things are. Yeah. Now, the agency, obviously, with it being in Hertfordshire, it is Hertfordshire who are a local authority. Now, for all their faults, you know, as all local authorities have, you know, that is one thing I can safely say about Hertfordshire, knowing a lot of the team that work there through my time when I used to work.
when you
actually, they don't make this stuff up. They don't make this stuff up. It's not just to annoy people. It's not just to say, nah, you know. They have children waiting, of course they do, like all the other agencies. And they're not doing it just to pee off people who come forward as adoptive parents. But this is, come on, people. Anybody who's listening to this is already involved, let's face it, or you're maybe on the way to it. But if you're not and you've just picked this up randomly, please don't think that you're entitled to become a parent through adoption just by turning up on the front door of your local authority. It's not how it works. Have I ranted?
I think you've been perfectly reasonable. It just is really worrying that this, you get these narratives, these tropes, don't you? It's like clickbait. You phone up the local, the Hertfordshire
Bugle
or, you know, Bugle and whatever. And you ring them and you say, oh, we wanted
to
adopt.
I feel like I need to find them while you're chatting.
Yeah, we should really, you know, give them credit where credit's due. But it's just so annoying because you think, one side you've got this narrative where, you know, anyone can adopt, you can adopt. You know, so you've got the whole national campaign, you can adopt. And then, rightly so, there's people who are safeguarding that, going, whoa, hold the heck on. Not anyone can adopt. You know, we're not just giving kids away, you know, willy-nilly with, you know, as a rebate on your council tax.
Exactly.
Literally,
you've
got to meet the basic standards and you've got to, because this is not 1965, as you rightly said. And then you've got the minister going, Gavin Williamson sort of picking up on that, going then, naughty social workers. And you kind of go, blimmin', social workers just can't win. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm happy to criticise social workers when they deserve it. But you just think, I'm glad that they sort of ask difficult questions and they say, yes, but. Then for a newspaper, it's kind of, it's just a, you see it all the time, without fail, every 6 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever. You know, caring couple refuse child.
I know, it's not just...
Bless.
I know. Oh. That's not how it works. That really isn't how it works. Okay,
hey-ho.
I'm going to post that. I found the link, so here's the link. And it was a Hertfordshire Mercury.
Oh, that's a great name for a newspaper.
Isn't it just?
You know, I don't want to be disparaging about the Hertfordshire Mercury. However... I just think it's an easy target, isn't it? It's just
social work is an easy target. Yeah.
There's no research there.
Do you know what? All news when it comes to kids is, you know, is news, isn't it? You know, let's face it. Oh, yeah. The poor loves, you know, they wanted to become parents and they couldn't because the local authority wouldn't let them. Just another failing of a local authority, you know. Yeah. That's not how it works. That really isn't how it works. And we've I'd love to kind of sit. Yeah.
And they should do that.
Yeah, but the thing is that this is, I think it's quite irresponsible of the media to kind of just post this stuff without actually counterbalancing it with, you know, with the input truth of an agency. It doesn't necessarily need to be that agency that specifically, but it could be any adoption agency. They will tell you the same, you know. I'm sure there's social workers listening going,
absolutely.
Oh, really sorry.
We could give a really succinct reason why it's appropriate that some people are asked to pause, wait, go away and do a bit of work on themselves.
Yeah.
But you know full well that the local authority cannot comment. They cannot, you know, because if they did, the same blooming couple would have them up before the beak to, you know, damages.
I love it when you say that.
I'm sorry.
The beak.
Before the beak. That's probably really disparaging. Before the courts. Because they've breached their confidentiality. So
it does,
It's an easy target, isn't it? It's just, you know. So
and you know what? If it was, if they refused them based on the fact that they were single, LGBT, you know, race, whatever, fine.
Stuff,
I get that. I get that.
Hang them high.
There is nothing wrong with what they've, you know, asked them to go away and consider. And it's not like they didn't say, don't come back, the door is shut. Oh. They've asked them to go away and work.
That might be a consequence. Well,
I think it might be the case now, but...
Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. You know, you think, all right.
Yeah, but, you know, anyway, that's...
Wouldn't you love to be the social worker when they come back?
We've
had some counselling. Our friend Dave down the street went on a 3-day course and he's a counsellor. And we've had some counselling and go, oh, really? Now we want you to run a blooming marathon now. Anyway.
What it also shows as well is kind of lack of understanding about adoption and fostering, in a lot of ways. Because, you know, if you complain about the fact that you've been asked to go for a bit of counselling, then how are you going to deal with that if your children need a little bit of therapy or actually it triggers you in some way or, you know, whatever the case may be. If that's your attitude towards it before you even get started, then you really need to kind of take a little bit of a step back and a big look at in the mirror, I think.
Yes, I think that's only reasonable. So we're covering some ground here tonight and we're keeping a tight sense of discipline on our timings because people have probably got things to do today.
They're watching, you know, they've joined us with a cup of tea or a glass of wine. They've got the Ferrero Rocher out, you know, they're in for the or they're not. You know.
What do you think about the coconut Ferrero Rocher?
Oh, I've never tried them. I've still got four boxes of Ferrero Rocher from the year. Actually, our mutual friend Nigel keeps on bringing around gifts of chocolate biscuits, tins of chocolate, Prosecco, and Ferrero Rocher.
He's not fattening you up to kill you and eat you, is he?
They're stored in our little secret stash place. Can't say too much, just in case anybody here.
I'll tell you anecdotally.
Large place where we store everything.
Well, Paula, the good Mrs. C, she went on one last night. She went, I'm rearranging the cupboards. And long story short, the outset was that she discovered all of the places she'd been hiding chocolate from the children. We've got about a cubic meter of chocolate that had been hidden in things like random things like the laundry basket or the dishwasher tablet jar, you know, just to try and keep the truffling 15-year-old out of them.
For us, it's a 22 and 21-year-old. It's not the 14-year-old, but I'm with you.
If only that ability to find chocolate and biscuits in the house was a transferable skill to things like socks, school uniform, tie, laptop, homework,
anything else. Yeah.
The washing basket.
Getting up on time. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're not going to hit a gripe on about kids.
No,
but I am up for that. If we're, you know, if we're going to go there, I'm happy to go for that. So I am. I've had a year. You know, I've had a year. We've all had a year. Article 39, so the Adoption of Children Coronavirus Amendment Regulations 2020 got kicked out. Like, I mean, it's all kind of dissolved anyway, mostly. But it got thoroughly kicked around by the courts
yesterday. Beaten, didn't it? Yeah.
Thrashed and flogged, and everyone involved was totally ashamed of themselves. So these were the regulations that were brought in at the end of April, in light of the pandemic, and they were amendments to statutory kind of functions of social workers, you know, things like fostering panels, adoption panels were kind of like, meh, we'll not do that. Medicals, meh, not so sure. But I think the key one that everyone was, well, things like, so if you're in fostering, you know, you, within the context of fostering, you have to have independent reviews. So they're called LAC reviews, looked after child reviews, horrible name. So from the start of a fostering placement, you've got to have one within 28 days, you've got to have one, then you've got to have one 3 months after that, and then they go to a 6 month cycle. And they were kind of like, they just said, we're not going to do them. So everyone was like, what the hell? These are the kind of safeguards to stop children, you know, like children's lives kind of just meandering on. The other thing, probably more critical, was the removal of the six. There's a statutory requirement for children in the looked after system to be seen every 6 weeks. It's usually policy driven to down to 4 weeks, and they just removed it.
Yeah.
Oh, there was a big hoo-ha, wasn't there? Lots of people were very upset.
And rightly so, I think, in a lot of ways. I mean, we obviously had to make some concessions because it was a pandemic, let's face it. But some of them were just a little bit too much. And it almost seemed, from my perspective, a little bit, I don't want to use the word lazy, but I'm going to. Seemed a little bit lazy. It was like, okay, so we can't get out, so let's not bother, you know, that kind of thing. There's ways of doing things even in a pandemic, and you know yourself, as a social worker, you were classed as a key worker or an essential worker, so therefore there was nothing stopping you standing outside. And yes, it would have looked a bit weird
against the weird window.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that's how it should be, but you know what I'm saying, you know, there was ways it could have been done.
And sit in the garden, have a chat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it wasn't, but what I'm pleased about really was that it wasn't just the third sector that were getting a bit antsy about this either. There was a lot of the kind of, local authorities and stuff like that who didn't change. Yes, in terms of visits, visits were difficult for everybody, you know, and especially, I'm not being funny, if you're an older social worker or someone with an underlying health condition.
Yeah.
During that time, you may have felt that you couldn't, but the majority of kind of agencies in this, you know, fair, like the voluntary sector as an example, you know, they kept on with their panels and with their, you know, all the stuff, sort of stuff that they had to get on with. The medicals, all the right, the medicals maybe they waited until the kind of restrictions lifted until they would send people to that sort of thing.
Well, there was a self-declaration. So that, to my mind, is there's an integrity about that. People will be honest with you about, you know, blood pressure or...
In the same way that you would be before you kind of, when you were doing your stage one, before you went for your medical kind of thing, you would say some, oh, well, I've got high blood pressure, or, you know, I had cancer, or, you know, whatever. So, you know, but I think it's a little bit of an embarrassment as well that, you know, the minister and his advisors thought that this was a good idea at the time. And I just think, I remember reading at the time that people were going, who did they ask if this was, you know, I don't think they did. I think that it just came down from, you know, the crisis talks.
You say that, but you know what? I had a really interesting conversation, and I only remember now I got an email from someone at the DfE, and it was sort of, and it was kind of the first few weeks, and it was all a bit chaotic. And why me?
Is this what happens when you get an MBE? You have to read their emails. Is that your role?
Yeah, it's in the Queen writes to you and says, from now on, one must read all one's emails.
Don't do that. Don't do that. You'll have it taken off you.
I will, won't I? So I got an email that said, is there anything you think would help? Because obviously you're involved in fostering. Mm. And I kind of thought, I had to think about it and went, ooh, I can't think. I can't remember what I said, but there was a few things I thought, sort of minor things that I thought might be a bit helpful.
Yeah.
And that was the end of it, really. And I didn't think any more of it, but then obviously they went and asked, they must have asked some people, but that was part of the criticism, that they'd not asked even the Children's Commissioner and Longfield.
Yeah,
suddenly all
exactly.
became clear.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah, yeah. So, and, you know, who can blame her for her message then?
You never asked me.
Yeah. With her box, with the plant at the top.
With a box and plant. Never asked me. We've so carried. We'll do the chances of getting her on. Maybe we should invite her on.
Ooh, no, maybe give her a little bit of a holiday. I mean, she's not going anywhere, let's face it, because nobody can go anywhere, but, you know, maybe give her a little bit of a break, and then that might be something,
Be good, wouldn't it? That'd be exciting. So that's been dissolved, and I think that we're back to what our standard visits, the 6 weeks.
I mean, I think that if you know, obviously we're all in lockdown at the minute, in both countries, ours and yours finishes at the same time, although we've been doing it for 2 weeks longer than you have.
It's not a competition. You're so much.
I just want a haircut. I just want a haircut. That's all I want. I just want a haircut. But it'd be interesting to see, in the same way that we've all had to do things differently, it'll be interesting to see if this will spark any kind of discussions in terms of change and making things easier for not just children. I mean, there's a bit of flexibility, isn't there? You know, I remember I was thinking about this the other day, actually, and it's not relevant to these kind of statutory visits and stuff like that. But, you know, when the social workers used to visit, when we had the older two boys placed with us, we noted that they just, the lanyard thing, and that's a big thing for a lot of people. Like, you know, the social worker as a family, there's no need for them to wear a lanyard when they visit your house. But it used to really trigger the boys in terms of a reminder. Whereas what they wanted was for her to go on the trampoline with them so that they could chat to her there rather than being taken up into a private room with a lanyard and a note and, you know, notepad and pen kind of thing. And it strikes me that, you know, social workers know, a good social worker will know what is good for that specific child. And within these circumstances, there needs to be a certain amount of kind of flexibility for social workers and team managers to be able to say, yes, that is right for this child and this family. Not necessarily reviewing every single family during a pandemic, but, you know, certainly the ones that you're involved with.
It sort of goes back to the stuff that Anne Longfield had raised. I mean, that I mentioned in relation to, like, visits. Like, if you've got an ongoing relationship with a child, you've known them for a year or whatever, then you can have a telephone conversation with them. You can have a meaningful engagement with them in a much reduced manner. Whereas if you don't know them, you do literally have to rock up and look at someone's bedroom. And a lot of times it's policy. You're a social worker, you can't breach the policy. You've got to see the room. So, I mean, while we're in foster, I don't want to be drawn at the rocks of my job. But
I've got more to say on it if you want me to fill in for you.
No, it's fine. this is a deep ritual of thought here. We as a fostering social worker, we have no statutory responsibility for the child, but we do have a duty to like everyone has a duty in relation to safeguarding.
Yeah.
But also we have a duty to monitor child's welfare.
Yeah.
But we're not the allocated social worker for that child. Mm-hmm. But we seek to build good relationships with children and to get to know them, and kind of we're not there for them, and so it's a peripheral relationship. It tends to be quite positive because we're just like, oh, we're just here talking to your foster care, cup of tea, biscuit, and they're just pottering on, but we're always watching. So we get to kind of, and the nature of where I work is that we tend to have spent a long time with kids, you know, we've over years, and but even then, we've been, you know, I know that I know of social workers that I've worked with have been asked to undertake visits on behalf of the child's allocated social worker so that they can tick a statutory box. And you kind of go, well, I get that. In the times of a pandemic, I get that. But actually, that's not, it's not great practice, is it?
That is one of the practices that happens, because we've had that. And a lot of it came from our location compared to our children's social worker when we were placed. You know, we were a 3-hour drive. So that is the thing. And also there's this thing as well that's kind of striking me. We have this tendency to think that children who are in foster care are young, and they're not. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. You know, we have older. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, up to the age of, you know,
18,
adulthood,
21, 25,
and beyond. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I think that that's one of the issues that, in people's heads, especially if you're involved in adoption predominantly, you tend to think of, well, they're in foster care, so they're young So actually, they can't verbalize. You can't speak to them on the phone. Blah 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 blah. You'd have to visit them. But they're not all like that, you know. And that's another kind of part of it, isn't it? So
it's a yes. So we've well and truly unpicked all of that sort of stuff today. And it's all good. Now we've done all the stuff, but I know there's something you wanted to talk about because there was someone that someone who's sort of well known within the sector. I mean, I know her. When I saw a picture of her today, I thought, oh, I know you.
Oh, really?
And I thought, I don't know. And I'd met her a few times. And I think I remember having quite a few conversations and, you know, really positive. So I'll let you take the floor.
No, I mean, it's just kind of a very, not random. That's wrong to say random. But Jan Slayer, who was, I first knew her from Adoption UK. She worked as the head of adoption support when I first joined Adoption UK. And she then went on to become director of adoption support and register manager. And my line manager, actually, 5-6 years ago. She passed away a couple of weeks ago, very, very quickly, it has to be said. She wasn't ill for very long. And because of the pandemic, who knows how that contributed to how quickly that was. But she worked in a number of local authorities in her years. She, you know, started off as a young lady, as I heard today, actually, because it was her funeral today and I managed to watch it online, which is a very bizarre experience for anybody who's kind of had to do that sort of thing during all this. But, you know, she started off in a children's centre, and worked her way to doing her kind of social work stuff. And she just really, I think what was in my head today, when I worked for Adoption UK, we had a bit of an issue with one of the boys who disappeared for a week. And in that week, she was just the most supportive person I've ever come across in my life. We're talking a couple of years ago now. I think it was 4 years ago. 5 years ago, and just to have someone like that in my life. I mean, yes, we went to a number of events together. You know, the CVA conference is an example up in Aberdeen. Myself, her, and her husband went out for dinner. We actually met her randomly when we were on holiday in Singapore. She was there at the same time. She was just around the corner, and we checked in a couple of days before, and she went, oh, I'm going there tomorrow. It's like, oh, come to our hotel, have a few drinks, because we had obviously a free bar. But that wasn't just what she was about. I think the thing with Jan was that she was the first person that made me aware of child and parent violence. And it was a thing. And I know we've talked about it many times on here. We've done events on it. We've spoken about it, etc. But she was really the first person, and it was Adoption UK when we got some funding from the DfE to do a project on CPV and do the peer-to-peer support on the telephone, which right now it seems a little bit old-fashioned, but you know, now that we're in the days of Zoom and all that sort of stuff, but at the time it was quite groundbreaking. It was only 5 years ago, but it was quite groundbreaking, and she was the one that kind of put that in place and did it. And then with some of the changes of Adoption UK, she went on to work for PAC UK when some of the services were transferred over to PAC as part of the what should we call it, the financial issues that we had at the time. Right now it seems a little bit old-fashioned,
and
but,
you know, she really became a part of
Zoom and all that sort of stuff.
She took over most of the kind of adoption related stuff, and when PAC became part of Family Action, she was the director for PAC. So it's all been very fast in terms of how it's gone for her, but I kind of just wanted to mention her because, you know, any kind of practitioners who've been in the industry a long time will have come across her name at some point. And, you know, people like Joanne Alper, who's been on very recently, you know, she worked very closely with her. She worked closely with a load of people, especially in the kind of Midlands, where she was originally based when she became a social worker. And she has had a massive impact on kind of adoptive families in terms of trying to support them and stuff. So yeah, just really wanted to mention her to kind of, yeah, definitely, you know, I mean, she had planned her retirement. I think she was 63, 64. She, you know, she celebrated her 60th when we were all at Adoption UK and we had a massive big old hoo-ha for her. And, you know, you wouldn't have thought she was 60. She was like 40, you know, she was that young. She was just... just an amazing kind of thing. And on my 40th, she did the presentation for my 40th birthday when I was at work. And, you know, she was so funny with the way she presented everything. You know, it's like, Scott might as well just drink Prosecco instead of coffee kind of all day, that sort of thing. So an amazing lady. Will be sadly missed in the industry, but, you know, my thoughts really do go to her husband and her two kids and her parents who are still around and sadly weren't able to get to the funeral because of the restrictions today. So
I know that's damn awful.
Heartbreaking. Yeah,
cool. Well, if you've got this far in the podcast, I'm sorry that Sarah Lloyd isn't going to arrive at any given moment.
No, I know. Yeah,
we'll pop that one out with Sarah Lloyd in a few weeks. I have to say, Sarah Lloyd was fantastic. And all the way through, I kept thinking, she's like, if I was to think in my head of what a Scottish auntie would be like, she is that, isn't she? She's like an embodiment of Scottish auntie. Yeah, that's
a public Scottish auntie, not the private Scottish auntie.
All right, I've not met her privately.
You've met my auntie. You have met my auntie, so you know.
Well, there's some Scottish stereotypes, isn't there? There's the twee Scottish lady stereotype, and there's the other stereotype.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, let's not, just in case, because I don't know if she actually listens. She might listen, because obviously I never ring her, because I'm just such a naughty nephew. She might just listen now and again.
She could like come and stitch one on you, as they would say.
Yeah, stick the heat on it. Yeah, exactly.
Well,
but Sarah's podcast will be amazing when it comes to you.
Oh, real barnstormer that one. And the coaches that she brought with her as well that get crashed the podcast. Yeah, they were really good. We've got some fantastic interviews coming up. I think that we're hitting a real purple patch in relation to the voices that are coming on. We've got birth mums, a range of birth mums. You're talking to lots of adopted adults and transnational.
And an SGO as well.
SGO.
An SGO who's nephew, which was pulled me in.
Yeah, there's been tears, haven't there? You've been blubbing around.
Oh, shush, don't say that. Yes. I was only on one of them, but to be fair, it was quite emotive, actually, listening to them both.
You suffer with emotional pygmyism, don't you? But don't worry.
unlike you.
Unlike me. Block of...
Barrier up.
Yes, the portcullis came down. First day of social work training. This is how to kill your emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
Anywho, we're off into the long grass again. Right, well... Yeah.
But should we just end on a high quickly? Because I know you want to go, but actually... Yeah. If
you can find a high, let's end on it.
Well, I think there is, because we need to have a laugh, don't we? We need to have a giggle.
Oh, no.
So, when we talk about campaigning...
No, this is so bad for us. We are being bad doing this.
No, well, it was you that brought it up. You sent it to me. I would, and it's interesting, actually, because it did make us giggle. It also made us a little bit, I don't know.
Feel bad
angry
for giggling?
Yeah. Excuse me. Oh, just coughed. Didn't make me feel angry, but it did make me wonder about this kind of situation. Go on, explain
really
it.
Dancing. Well, I was... So I usually wake up early. So I was sat, it was like half past six.
Very early.
6 o'clock this morning. I was drinking coffee. And I kind of usually have a little wander around the internet and see what's going on, what the word in the street is. And I saw a blog from an adopter, not heard from them before. So I thought, well, I'll have a little look. And I was scrolling through and just kind of getting a measure of them. And I just like to know what's the vibe, you know? And then I got... sort of all the way down to the bottom, and then there was kind of this, I'm really feel really bad for saying it now, but there was this phrase, campaigning for retail equality for, I don't even know what that means. Campaigning for retail equality for adoptive parents. And I think, you know, we've laughed like drains, but we're trying to be very sensible now, aren't we? But yes. Just as
I think there's other ways toward it, but yeah, and to be fair, we are two men, okay? So
and
this is what I said before we come on. I would be interested to hear a female perspective of this, because actually what our priorities are, and you know, I'm a gay man, you're a straight man, what are people's priorities? I mean, is
I'm offended that you've put me in a box, Scott.
Oh, sorry. Would you prefer to be not in a box? I'll take you out of the box. There you go, out of the box.
I am just
sitting on the side there. You can just be you.
No, but sorry.
Oh, don't get me started on that one. Anyway, that would be the rocks. Ooh. Believe me, that would be the end of this podcast, actually. But anyway, and I just think what's our priorities in terms of campaigning. You know, I'm not sure retail is up there, so I would really be interested in hearing from the ladies in terms of that, because we represent, well, I represent my kind of own opinions, you represent yours. It's not my priority in terms of campaigning for retail equality, for adoption. You know, there's stuff that we can get.
Was it around? I think it was around like wanting to have cards that reflected the experience, and it was wanting to have like other things.
And I get that, but actually, you know what? The card manufacturers get criticised for, you know, some of them are a bit OTT in terms of humour and stuff like that. So they put out these, you know, you're my brother. Wish you.
Were
it's
adopted.
Obvious because you were adopted. I don't know, and they are crass and they're not great, but you know, in the same way we now have same-sex marriage cards, same-sex engagement cards, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's coming, it is coming, but it's not a campaign. If you contact a campaign is trying to get the ASF for another 5 years, you know, that's a campaign, that's you know, that's doing your job.
Maybe we're just not right.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm just not. Maybe my kind of life has just become this argumentative sod from, you know, north of the border who, you know, just takes, you know, whatever. I don't know.
You should change your Twitter bio. That really got a ring to it.
Angry gay Scotsman.
Angry. Wow, there's a Twitter handle. The angry gay Scotsman. That is, there's mileage in that. That is a brand.
I'm going to write that down. I just feel angry.
What the hell you want? Depends how angry you are. But I do think
I'm not an angry person, though. That's the thing. I'm not normally an angry person.
Press your buttons. Find your buttons. Then we'll
I
just
get ranty.
Mr. Angry.
Yeah, I do get ranty, but I'm not angry. Definitely not angry. Anyway. I just think if we've got issues over retail, then we're kind of going in a different direction.
I'm just pragmatic. I think there's about 3,000 adoptions a year. There's just not. There's no money in it, is there?
It's not. Yeah, no. In the same way that, you know, we see all the stuff that we would have done had social media been around when we were adopters. Prospective adopters looking for our family and stuff. You know, Instagram is a flood with bedrooms being painted and cots and new beds and bedding and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I have photographs of all of that, but it never went on social media because I didn't have
That's true.
And, you know.
Well, I tell you what, how about if the person who wrote the blog ever, this ever gets to them and they've listened to it and they're gnashing their teeth or heartbroken, please come on and put us right.
Yes. Exactly, because there's two sides to every story. And just on that, Matthew Welsh says, hi, guys, live on Facebook. And Beth-Ann said, totally agree with you. There's far more issues to be bothered by. So thank you. You've validated our opinion. However, we must give the right to reply if it's ever an option.
Yes, the echo chamber echoed back. We believe you. Yeah. Thank you.
We do.
Right, I'm going to go and turn this into a podcast and do some magic with levers and pulleys and whirly gigs. And I apologise as well for my new mic that I had trouble with my stereo mono combination after binging it up massively. There was a strange thing going on if you were listening to it through AirPods on an Apple phone that my voice was in your
left ear. Oh, you did do something naughty, did you? Oh!
No, I don't know what it is. Do you want a technical answer? So what? All microphones are mono. Well, our microphones are mono. So our microphones are mono. But they're recorded in stereo. And so on your microphone, it gets recorded in left and right. So it's equally mixed. Well, for some reason, mine records a mono signal into the left stereo thing. Why it does that, I don't know. Because it's a mono mic. Why it records there, I don't know. So then when I mix them together, it sounds fine when I mix it and I was listening to the mix. When I upload it to the server, that's fine. And then it does its magic and it goes to iTunes. For some reason, when it gets to iTunes, it turns my voice into the left ear. And I was walking the dogs trying to work it out, and I was kind of going mad listening to myself. Anyway, that is like the most boring end.
I was just going to say a couple of things about that. Number one, like, that's really boring. But number two, it just shows what I take for granted in life, because I really didn't think there was a thing where it went left and right and all that sort of stupid stuff. So
how do you think how do you think this gets to iTunes?
I don't know. I just think you press a button that says
iTunes,
and off it goes.
There's literally a big button on my computer that says iTunes.
You'll be doing another one shortly as well.
Yeah, well, you've got your own podcast, but we're not going to go there. We should do a launch for your podcast.
We will do, yeah, when it comes. We'll do that. When we've got that side.
Right,
yeah.
I'm going to go and do something much more interesting.
Fabulous. Thanks for the chatter. It's been a really interesting night.
Excellent. I shall press. Well, yeah, Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.
Well, that was that then, wasn't it? Well, we're still live, though, aren't we?
You are. Click it off. Goodness sake, man.
I'm wanting to see what's going on the live.
What should we call it? Not a lot, to be fair.
Oh, it was nice to see what's his face do, da.
What's his face do, da? Oh, yeah. Mark Orr from Jersey.